Welcome back, brothers and sisters, to Positively American, the podcast where we not only look at the news and the politics of the day, but also discuss how we're going to save the nation we also dearly cherish. Today, we've got a banger. We're going to cover the political left in the country that has driven the supporters to the brink of exhaustion with outrage. It turns out there's an emotional cost to being at level 10 all the time. The next generation is turning away from the lies and manipulations of the left toward the right. And finally, we're going to cover a little taste of the manipulations while we nuke it from orbit. So let's kick it to the intro and let's get it. Beautiful people, we have got a freedom train to jump on and drive all the way to the next station. This is something that is so crucial. And as I mentioned in the introduction, my name is Braden Langley, and I am coming from the gun side of things. I have a YouTube channel called Langley Outdoors. It's on YouTube. I talk about gun rights, gun control, and I really cut my teeth in the political area right over there. And I'll tell you from firsthand experience, there is no more comfortable place for a gun controller or a leftist to be than the gun control debate. They think they have a monopoly on the conversation, and so they are willing to go well beyond the norms in any other sector of the political sphere in order to try and hone their points and win. It's something that is really a sight to behold, I can tell you that. But having said that, I've learned a lot of what they do, how they do it. And the left is a hive mind. They do not have independent thought per their independent sectors. Everything that they are doing in the gun control fight, and they have been doing for years, they are now moving into the mainstream because they've seen it as effective. And that is why you are seeing this gun rights fight veteran jump right into the fray in general politics. Now, about me a little bit more. I'm American as the day is long. I married an American woman who is also American as the day is long. And guess what? We produced American children. I tended to collect them there for a moment, and I have a couple of them. So the thing that's so crucial, and I think a lot of you would resonate with this, is it's not just about us. It's about the next generation as well. Sure, we'll fight for ourselves. Sure, we'll fight for our rights. Sure, we'll stick our foots right in our mouths defending ourselves sometimes. But at the end of the day, you're not going to take the rights from me, but more importantly, you're sure as heck not going to take the rights from the next generation, the thing that we care about the most. We have been given a blessing in this country, the blessing of freedoms protected by the Bill of Rights. Humanity hasn't had that in any other country. We are unique. We are not evil. We are actually pretty dang amazing. Do we have problems? Yeah, we got problems. Name me one person that you know in your entire life that doesn't have problems, but it's a pretty awesome person. Everyone has problems. It's not about the fact that if you have a problem, it's about what you do from that problem and build towards a better person. It's not difficult. But for some reason, the left has decided to fixate on issues that they deem more important in the country's destination themselves than in order to destroy everything that came before because it did not pass a purity test. For example, if when you were 15 years old, you had a smart mouth and you talked back to authority a whole lot, not like anyone we know who's talking to you right now on a microphone, and then you turned on later to be someone who actually kind of values opinions that are older than me, like from mentors. Yeah, that doesn't mean I'm a terrible person. It means I was inexperienced, I was immature, and I didn't learn yet. That's okay. Experience will teach you, and I promise if you don't listen to people, life will kick you right in the teeth until you learn it yourself. You will learn either way. But the idea that America is evil because of XYZ problem is a stupid and flawed premise. And we're going to break that down right now with a few of the examples I'm about to hit. So, for example, with the first one, are younger Americans shifting back to the right? Now, you can almost hear the left screech from the caverns wherever they reside in the leftist arenas here. And we're not talking about Democrats. Democrats are not leftists. Leftists are the same people who have been involved in the same movements that have been involved that came from Central Europe. We're talking about communism. We're talking about socialism. The idea that the collective can be controlled by a centralized state over the capitalist system where independent individuals are working together towards a common goal for the benefit of all. Yeah, that's quite the conflict. That's who we're talking about. The people who want to destroy that system because everything has to be utopia. That's the left we're talking about. We're not talking about Democrats. So while they're shrieking in terror because the next generation would be coming up in a more conservative manner, you got to ask yourself a very important question. Why would that be? This whole podcast and a lot of my channel on YouTube is dictated to why. Why would they do this? If you can find the why, if you can find the reason, you will 100% get to the bottom of what you're talking about every single time. There is no exception. And so the irony of what I'm about to share with you is not lost on me. Where I learned that principle, and it's a very valuable principle, the principle of why and being able to lead through understanding the why and motivating others and meeting them where they are at, which is going to be a big underlying theme in this podcast. It came from the leftist bastion of Apple Incorporated, where I worked for 10 years while I was building my gun rights YouTube channel. And, you know, I'll be honest, it was quite the experience having gun rights in the morning, going to work and having ultimate leftist ideals forced down my throat through corporate indoctrination, and then gun rights of the night, in the evening, when I was building my channel on my off time. It was quite the experience, but that was where I first tasted something that I think a lot of you will resonate. And when you hear me talk about these things, guys, please get in the comments, get in the feedback, let me know if I'm over the target here. But when you're looking at what we're talking about in the first point here about younger Americans shifting back to the right, do you think that has anything to do with being beaten and belligerent, beaten and beleaguered into the idea that you're bad because of who you are and who you're born to be? Were you male? Ooh, patriarchy alert. I mean, that alone is stupid. That's 50% of the population. So I can't imagine why they wouldn't openly embrace the fact that they're terrible and evil based on their anatomy. Yeah, that's weird. So anyway, back to my point. I'm one of the first generations, I'm mid-30s, so I'm one of the first generations that experienced the shift from meritocracy translating into success into checkbox utopianism forced on you from a corporate environment, because while we might not have the very best of every individual for the better outcome, we have every single checkbox represented. Everyone has someone that they can look to and say, yes, I'm part of that group. Even though it's not the best person for the job, it doesn't matter, because dadgummit, we have those checkboxes. Check, check, checkity checked. Look how amazing we are. Insert virtue signal here. That started to come around in my mid-20s, early 20s. Then that started rolling and really picked up steam, and that's kind of filtered out from corporate into the general culture overall. And that's kind of what we're seeing. But it taught me something incredibly important, and that's that why that I was telling you about. So with that, with my shared experience, with my, honestly, emotional scarring, because that was not fun when I was in my formative years, but it ironically brought forward a whole lot of points and a whole lot of learning, which brought me to this point at which I use those same skills in my gun rights channel on YouTube and also on this podcast. But think about this from a younger perspective. And when you're there, if you're still there, if you're a younger man or a younger woman, you are not evil. You are not bad because of who you are. You are not bad because you're American. You're not bad because of your race. You're not bad because of your sex. You're not bad because of any of those things, even if the political left is telling you that you are, and you are guilty for things that you did not do. That's not right. That I will not accept that, and I don't want you to either. And I think that has something to do with what we're about to talk about, are younger Americans shifting back to the right. So, again, this is a Washington Post article. I didn't make this up, right? Let me show you a few of these things. Quote, overall, the data suggests that younger Americans are more moderate than older generations. Among Gen Z teens, conservative is a more common identifier than liberal, while among white teens, Republican is far more common than Democrat. All right, well, right off the get there, that's a little bit of a change. You can imagine why they'd be writing articles about it in the drive-by media, as Rush used to say, or in the, you know, I would just say leftist media, to be quite honest with you, because it's kind of gone from there. But why would they be concerned about that? The answer is simple. They can't figure it out. Their ideals are perfect, right? I mean, America is clearly evil. Why would anyone be okay with the ideals of conservatism? We're going to break that down here in a second. I got one more thing for you. Then we'll break down the possibilities and the potential reasons why. And I really look forward to hearing your comments on this. There are a variety of ways this might be interpreted, going back to the article, including that 17-year-old Americans have spent half of their lives in a country where right-wing politics is defined by Donald Trump. Ooh. It could relatedly be that the example of racial insecurity from older white Americans trickling down to younger white ones, or it could be an aberration. Time will tell. And that's actually a quote. I'm not making that up. So it turns out, beautiful people, that it's these old whiteys. It's terrible. I mean, they're just telling the young whiteys that it's that we can't do this and lefties are bad. And so therefore, because of the obvious reasons of their race and their innate evilness, well, therefore, that's trickling down. It's terrible. Or that might be completely wrong and it might be an aberration. You know what? Time will tell. Wow, guys. You guys really managed to sandwich racism right next to, nor it could be nothing. It's really impressive how you managed to do that. But anyway, let's just walk through a few examples of what it could be. I don't know. I mean, call me crazy. This might be uncomfortable for some, and it might be a little too obvious for others. Conservatives have kids. I don't want to be that guy, but I mean, like, abortion, the right to choose, healthcare for females, like all that, that's kind of what one of the main tenets of the left. And, you know, I'm not a mathematician, but if I've got one side of a political spectrum that is in their own experience, in their own life, and finding a way to really live life to the fullest through experiences and fully embracing the avoidance of a family with the easy out and avoidance of responsibility through a medical procedure for their own actions. You know, you can't tell where I stand on that issue. Or the other side, which is about building a family, building wealth through housing and things that protect them. It's almost like a system where you get married and you join a household, you have children, you get that household to protect those children, and they're raised in an individual household unit, and then they go out into the world. And the left's like, how could they be more conservative? Well, I mean, in my opinion, a very horrible, ghastly statistic, I think 1 million babies were aborted last year. Pretty sure all those weren't conservative. And I don't want abortion to be a thing. Don't get it twisted. That's not what this whole thing's about. But I'm just saying, if you've got one group that's doing out 3 kids per on the average, or 2.5, and then the other group is doing under 1, okay, you're breeding yourselves out of existence. I'm sorry. Maybe that could factor in, especially since it's been 20 and 30 years since this whole, you know, whole push for your air quotes healthcare rights has come around. Or that's one option, you guys can tell me. Or maybe, and this is weird, I don't know who would think this, maybe young kids are just tired of being told they're evil because of who they are, alluding to what I said earlier. Maybe when you pop right out and you're kind of cruising around and you can barely walk, maybe not getting called something bad through CRT. I don't know. I mean, I might be old fashioned, but for some reason, I don't think that a toddler is born with an innate sense of I'm better than you because of genetics. But they're told that. So that makes sense. I don't know, but I can't imagine why a few years of that wouldn't ingrain a certain amount of resistance to the status quo that the left is trying to impose on people. That could be one. And, you know, I'm going to be honest. You could just have a good old-fashioned rebellion against the perceived power structure in the United States. A lot of the left is saying, well, they're just rebelling because this is clearly a rebellion against authority. And the left is in a position of power with the media, with the corporations, with the politicians, with the schools. So it's just rebellion. They'll grow out of it. You know, isn't it funny how it was earlier in life, we own the young vote and we own this demographic block of people as that vote. But now all of a sudden, they'll grow out of it when it completely inverts. Just observations for the back of the room. But yeah, so it could be rebellion. It could be a resistance to CRT, which is trash. Or, you know, maybe it's just all those abortions are actually factoring out mathematically. Or just maybe young men and young women, particularly young men, are just tired of being told that they're evil because they exist. I don't know. You guys can tell me, but there seems to be a few reasons stacked against the left on this one that might support the point that younger generations are conservative-leaning. And now that we've covered the possible whys, let's dive into what that could possibly mean. Our future is not gone, and it's not dead. We are going through a time in our nation, in my opinion, a dire time in our nation, where we've had a dramatic lurch to the left. And a lot of this has been based on the emotional extremism, based on the liberal or the leftist push to get their supporters emotionally distressed about catastrophic events for every Tuesday. For 8 years straight, it's been the world is going to end if you don't. And that does take a toll on you. But taking that piece out of it for a second, if the younger generation is trending conservative, and the conservatives who are now my generation, 30, mid-30s and older, is staunchly conservative, not changing, we not only have the responsibility, but we have the opportunity to bring them into the fold of which we have the nation fabric of which we've built and reinforce it with new blood. The left does not have that coming in. It is only a matter of time until they are sheerly outnumbered with brute numbers. You cannot get around it. No matter how much your emotions and how much your feelings want you to, you cannot get around the fact that we are having 2.5 to 3x kids that you are. That's just it. And it's only going to take 10 or 20 years. And before you know it, wow, America got real red real fast. Yeah, weird. But again, going back to my responsibility point, this is the key. If we take the responsibility seriously and we bring those who are younger in from a standpoint of patience and explaining the whys, explaining the history of why we are free, those that came before us and sacrificed blood, sweat, and tears, ingrain in them the ability to recognize and respect the sacrifices that came before us, and we pass along a freedom of which we were given that no one else in humanity has ever gotten, no other country, all of humanity, no one has had the rights that we've had. We have the opportunity and the responsibility and the privilege to pass that along. We are not a one-stop shop for freedom. We are a link in a chain. And this link has been solidified by years of being pounded and pounded and pounded on adversity from the left, calling you every name in the book. You are hardened. You are a veteran of this. Bring the next generation in, encourage them, provide shelter for them, make sure their foundations of freedom are set and sound, and send them out for their turn. We pass that torch of liberty right to them. Say, good luck. Hope all the best for you, boo. We're out. And that's how this works. That is why the left is terrified. That is why the left is upping the rhetoric, which gets me to my next point, which we are about to dive into right now. Now imagine if I were to tell you that after 8 and 10 years of everything is going to end if you don't vote this situation, everything is going to end if you don't watch this broadcast, everything is going to end if you don't protest this XYZ movement, that's good for about, I don't know, short term, 6 months, year, 2 years at most. Then you come into this funny little thing around exhaustion. I'm about to read to you a New York Times article of which the leftist politicians have genuinely run their constituents so far down and emotionally raw, they are exhausted. And now as I read this to you, I want to break something down really key in this point. They're losing ROI. Now, what do I mean by that? Earlier on, and that's return on investment if you guys are not familiar. Earlier on in this push against Donald Trump or the right or the MAGA or the fascist, whatever you want to call it, whatever, insert crisis here. There was this huge, massive push to get them out to the polls and get them protesting and wear your little pink hats and get your signs and, you know, have a grassroots protest with pre-printed signs that are printed out by pre-done protest groups. It's weird, but anyway. They do this on the gun control side a lot too. It's always the ultimate extreme. If you don't vote for this, this is the most extreme thing that you could ever imagine. If you don't tell your representatives this to vote for gun control, XYZ will happen. If you pass concealed carry or constitutional carry, everyone on the planet's going to die. I mean, literally, it is nonstop. But when you do that all the time, the return on investment minimizes. So here's the path that they took in the gun control group. I'm going to reference this a lot as this podcast goes forward because it's very good examples. I saw this in real time. They started out with the gun control push around common sense for gun safety. That was the big push they did for a little while. Then the pandemic rolled around and they went easily and slid right into the epidemic of gun violence. That was the thing that they started spewing from every apparatus they could possibly imagine for around 6 months to 2 years. Then once the epidemic of gun violence kind of went away, then it became the scourge of gun violence. And now we've got ghost guns, and now we've got zombie guns. And if you don't vote in this election, the entire planet, it will elicit a response from space itself. A meteor will come down and strike only the state in which you live in, and you and everyone you love will die unless you vote against Donald Trump, in which case it won't happen. Genuinely. That's effectively what they've done. And they've had to up the rhetoric because they're not getting the return. The people are getting numb to the fact that they're crying wolf. So what do? You have to keep on upping the rhetoric. AOC is a great example. Rashida Tlaib, great example. Ilhan Omar, amazing example. They go down this road of, you know, you need to vote Trump out because XYZ, you should be scared. And then when that stops losing its punch because they kind of lied forever, well, now it's women's rights are on the ballot. Then it becomes our democracy at stake. Are you seeing the pattern here? That's the whole point. Now, let me get to this New York Times article because I found this absolutely fascinating. Anti-Trump burnout. The resistance says it's exhausted. Bracing for yet another election against Donald Trump, America's liberals are feeling the fatigue. We're kind of like crisis out, one Democrat said. Now, why would that be? Do you think it's because they just decided to wake up one day and say, I want to have a crisis? Or do you think the media gave it to them on a steady diet, funded and fueled by the politicians? Because they're one and the same, media and the politicians, they're all on the same team, big D, right? And, you know, I know how that sounded, but it's not wrong. But anyway, let's keep going. Quote, some folks are burned out on outrage, said Rebecca Lee Funk, the Washington-based founder of The Outrage, a progressive activism group and purveyor of resistance-era apparel. Let's just pause right there, rub our eyes in confusion, because quite literally, the person who just said, some folks are burning out on outrage, has started a program that has merch, and it's called The Outrage. Hello? And it's a progressive activism group, and it's a purveyor of resistance-era apparel. Sweet baby Moses. Let something hit you in the face a little harder. They're burned out on outrage, says the founder of The Outrage. I mean, guys, you can't make this stuff up. This is leftism in a small little consumable pill, but let's continue. The people are tired. I think last election, we were desperate to get Trump out of office, and folks were willing to rally around that singular call to action. And this election feels different. Yeah, because the lefties are all taking naps because you jacked up their dopamine levels, and everything inside their brains are like, can I please just go to sleep? Or can I, well, I want to say go get a job and work on my career. Let's not get crazy. Let's go with dopamine. I find that supportive. But anyway, let's go back to the Democrats. A little bit of a rabbit right there. But for Democrats, the mission is similar. Now defending the White House, President Biden is trying to reassemble that sprawling anti-Trump coalition, casting the 2024 contest as another battle to save American democracy as Mr. Trump moves toward the Republican nomination. Let's cobble together that coalition that transcended time and barriers, and it was amazing and brought us the White House in 2020. Yeah, that's what happened. Moving right along from that one, here's some more examples of what I'm talking about. Then we'll kind of break it down a little further. We're kind of like crisis out, said Shannon, 36, a security guard in Pittsburgh. The idea of a Trump versus Biden rematch is a dumpster fire. I agree, by the way. And it's crisis fatigue for sure. Now, why would they have crisis fatigue? Ask yourself these questions, guys. They tell you every single time what the problem is. They hear it every cycle. This is the most important election ever, said Leah Daltrey, a Democratic strategist. The people saying it. While she considers Mr. Trump an existential threat, people want to vote for something and not necessarily against something. Okay, we're going to break this down because there's two very different things here. Again, she just said they hear it every cycle. This is the most important election ever. And by the way, Mr. Trump's an existential threat. I mean, You can't make this stuff up. This is almost sillier than the old the outrage that I read to you about 2 minutes ago, where it was like, man, everyone's just kind of outraged out and they're kind of tired, said my, but buy my merch from the outrage. It's just, guys, it's painful. It's so painful. But existential threat. And that's that. However, and this is key, I will give this woman credit. This is actually something that is solid and to pay attention to and break down. Quote, people want to vote for something and not necessarily against something. That is 100% true. We are in a point in our political cycle where it's, what's the worst that could happen? Well, the worst here between these two candidates is Biden, or inversely, the worst candidate between these two is Trump. So I'm going to vote for the second worst candidate. Okay, let's just put a pin in that for a second. We're going to go back to the yesteryear when I was young. This is kind of like that meritocracy thing that I was talking about in the prior segment when we were talking about meritocracy versus all the checkboxes. When did it become, in our country, the greatest freedom machine on the history, in the history of the planet, by the way? When did it become, let's vote for the lesser of two evils? We've been in that cycle for about 8 years now, maybe 10, 15. I don't like them, but man, I hate them. Okay, that's a pretty good recipe for bad outcomes. Why is it not, I want to vote for this person because I'm inspired by the vision that they are putting forward and we are going to do this together? Do you think it's any coincidence that this podcast that you're listening to is built around the why and how we're going to save this country together, a broad-based mission which depends completely on us working together and driving freedom to the next generation? The people are hungry for something other than hate that guy or I hate you. Or you don't hate him enough, you failed your litmus test, go say 18 Hail Bidens and you'll be fine. This is important stuff, guys. This is really crazy. But anyway, so wrapping this whole portion up, and I think this is an important piece to really take away here. The left has driven their constituents, the true believers, if you will, to the point of pure exhaustion. The conservatives are not at point of pure exhaustion. They are getting fired up to the point where we're going to hand our nation to the next generation. We aren't even, guys, we've been putting up with your exhaustion. We're not even awake yet. Like you thought you guys were really awesome with your little signs. You stand out there and, you know, you did this and hands off our bodies and you wore pink little hats and you really protested and man, you really did something great and you virtue signaled and Facebook was so proud of you and Instagram was awesome. You changed your image on Facebook and you really drove it home. Yeah, nah, the rest of us were at work. Now, it's getting to the point where we see the writing on the wall and the road and trajectory that the left is trying to take us towards is unsustainable. Again, not Democrat versus Republican. This is conservatism versus liberalism, leftism. This is collectivism happening on a day-to-day basis. Do you think it's any coincidence that all the things that they're pulling forward and bringing to their constituents as support points are things of a collective nature? I mentioned this in my first episode on this podcast. Kamala Harris goes out and says, it's your right to be safe. Really? My right to be safe? Wow, that sounds really positive. I do have a right to be safe. Oh, yeah? Hey, here's a quick question, critical thinking test. Who's going to provide that safety guarantee to you? TikTok, it's the government. So when a government official comes to you and says you have a guaranteed right for safety, and you are fully embracing the idea that the government is the purveyor and the protector of rights, which, by the way, the rights are what tells the government what they can't do, not what the government can do for you. You got a bit of a problem when the government dictates that you are not good for the collective health of the unit. You see where this goes? Everything that the left does has been tried and tried and tried again, and you've seen it practiced in the European democracies, in the socialism, and in the communism. Literally, everything has been exampled and modeled for us right over there across the pond. Big old body of water. Basically, just go east. You'll find it. The part where you can't start saying things and you'll get in jail for words, that's where you'll get in trouble. Now, there has been a recent development, to be fair, where you go north, the same thing kind of happens because it's a progressive creep that goes on everywhere. But freedom's still here. and we intend to keep it that way. But again, going back to the point, it's all about collective buckets. We will guarantee you this safety. Oh, yeah, you better hope you're not on the wrong end of that one. Which brings us to our next point. Something that really bothers me, and this is one of my pet peeves, beautiful people, this is, and I don't like it. I don't like it at all. When leftists, particularly progressives on MSNBC or CNN, the ones that put on their they're put on their $1,000 suits, they have $1 million salaries, they work a cushy job in a office and a studio, and they go and tell you the ilk and horrible nature of those evil rich people. The hypocrisy is astounding, but that doesn't stop them from condescending to you and telling you how you should live your life and how you're a moron and they're a genius. And if only you listen, because I have a nice shiny suit with a camera on. After all, I'm on MSNBC. I'm about to show you a clip. Actually, not YouTube. We're going to listen to it. We're going to listen to a clip, rather. And I want to break this down really important, because we have come to the point in the podcast where we are going to nuke it from orbit. Let's get it. This is Chris Hayes from MSNBC in full-on propaganda mode. Enjoy, and then we're going to nuke.
And this is the one conservatives love to get wrong, one we're obsessed with here on the show. There has been a big decrease in violent crime under President Biden. 2020 was one of the most dangerous years in America in a decade under Donald Trump. Violent crime spiked around the country. It spiked in both urban and rural areas. But in every year of the Biden administration, violent crime has come down. In fact, according to the latest estimates, 2023 is on track to have one of the lowest violent crime rates in half a century.
Oh, thanks, Chris Hayes. What will we do without you? There's only one problem. That's overt manipulation and propaganda. So let me break this down for you guys, because this stuff, like I said, this gets my goat to a degree I can't even explain. All right. So first of all, I would just like to throw out there, in honor and respect to my pro-gun roots and my gun advocacy channel, so I guess that means we don't need gun control anymore, because Biden has descended from on high, and he has provided us this ultimate safety, of which Kamala Harris has guaranteed us as a right, by the way, going back to a prior segment. I guess we don't need gun control anymore, because they didn't pass any gun control, and they were telling us the whole time they needed to pass gun control, and we had blood on our hands if we didn't do it, and then we didn't do it, and then numbers fell off a cliff, and now that's Biden's responsibility, and we should reelect him because numbers fell off a cliff. That's the first thing. I just wanted to say it for my people in there who really came from my from Langley Outdoors on YouTube. Now we're going to get to the more broad-based numbers and show you how this is blatant manipulation. What Chris is showing you, because you guys can't actually see it, what Chris is showing you here is a four-year span roughly, actually, of a downward trend line going from left to right in a descending pattern. Now, this is fascinating because the scale in which they're focusing on is from 2020, which you may or may not remember, we had something called COVID during that time, and we had an abnormal spike in violence across the board, both rural and urban, everywhere across the country we had a violent spike. And then we go forward about 3 years and we've had a dramatic, incredible, insanely unprecedented drop in violent crime across the board. Well, there's only one little problem, beautiful people. If you look at the numbers he's actually pulling from in the graph on a 30-year scale, 30 years takes us back to the 90s. And if you were to look at this graph online, you can see that it falls off a cliff from the 90s, where it was around 700 to 800 violent crimes per capita, and then dropped down to around 360, which is roughly where we are. We spiked to 380 in 2020, and now we're back down to 360. So what he's describing as this unbelievable, incredible, never before done, unprecedented liberal victory, all the while defunding police, saying police are evil, letting criminals out, progressive DAs across the country, all that's been going on. It's worked so well. Because he zoomed in and he only showed a peak and then a decline. The decline is right back to the normal numbers of around 2019, 2018, which was under Trump, which is the normalized mean of what we've been experiencing. They're trying to dress it up as this incredible, off-the-charts, never-done-before thing. All the while, they're defunding police, letting criminals out with progressive DAs. They are passing legislation which does not allow criminals to be held. No cash bail across the nation. And all of a sudden, crime's going down. It's so incredible. Don't believe your lying eyes. And again, in an ode, if that wasn't enough for you, in an ode and a little hat tip to my gun rights advocates out there, who I know are chomping at the bit for this one. At the exact same time that we've seen the decline in the violent crime rate, we have seen a never-before-experienced gun-buying binge. So if you were looking at this on a line graph, the violent crime is trending downwards, started at the same time that gun buying was going upwards. They intersected, and as gun buying continued, violent crime continued to fall. There is a direct correlation in the time frames between gun ownership and violent crime falling. Funny how they didn't tell us that, isn't it? It's weird that when you look at a graph and you zoom in and you can manipulate data all day long to prove that your guy is the guy to go with, even though can't really formulate a sentence, and he can't walk, and he can't really keep his gaze focused on what he's doing. He has no appearance of youth at all, and pretty much it's run as an empty suit. Other than that, no, look at this graph, guys. We zoomed in real tight, and a natural decline, from pandemic highs to a normal, which was normal before the pandemic. That's unprecedented. It's never been done before. In fact, the leftist ideology of no penalties for criminals whatsoever has paid off so great that criminals just said, "You're right. I don't want to be a criminal." Or you're manipulating graphs and you are lying and you are using deceit to garner votes into convincing people to give up their rights on a mainstream platform. I don't know. You guys can tell me what you think. And with that, that concludes this episode. I'm going to kick it to the outro. Thank you guys so much for watching, and I will listen with you on the next one.